Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
Suicide is preventable. There is nothing inevitable about it. And actually, it's a death that can be prevented right until the very, very last minute. And we can all play a part in that.
If you connect with people, they are much less likely to then go and take that next step because they feel like they're suddenly connected with things again in a way that maybe they've felt disconnected up to that point.
Be reassured if you know, see that something's not quite right, trust your instinct and take that step that could help save somebody's life.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. I'm your host, Mick Coyle, with another edition of the podcast as we head ever closer to episode 300 of Mental Health Monday. Crikey. Oh, we're going to have to get a good guest for that, aren't we? Episode 300, it's not far away. Thank you, as ever, to everyone who's checking out the podcast. If you are streaming us for the first time, if you're downloading us, if you're checking us out through various different podcast providers, it's great to have you with us. My name's Mick. I've been doing this since 2017, having conversations with people about mental health and doing so in a way which hopefully breaks down the stigma, challenges some of those taboos that people have around mental health and really normalise the conversation about mental health. It's what we endeavour to do each and every week. It's something we will continue to do for as long as possible. Our guest this week is Dr. Lisa Marzano. Now, Dr. Lisa is one of the UK's leading suicide researchers, and she is an expert in a million and one different aspects of this and has been for a couple of decades. She's working with Samaritans and the British Transport Network to talk about the Small Talk Saves Lives campaign this week, off the back of a new survey from Samaritans, which has found that actually only around half of people in the UK feel confident approaching and speaking to someone they don't know if they were concerned about them in public. So you're walking down the street, you're at the train station, you're walking somewhere else, and someone appears to be having difficult thoughts. You're thinking, do they want me to approach them? How are they going to respond when I approach them? They look like they're in some sort of crisis and I'm not trained in how to do this, so I won't say anything, I won't do anything, and maybe hope that somebody else will. You can kind of understand why people would think about that, sort of a very British stiff upper lip thing to do, turn your back and hope somebody else solves the problem. But of course, there are things you can do, and you don't need to be a psychologist, you don't need to be a counsellor, you don't need to have 20 years of experience in the field to strike up a conversation with someone, because actually the research shows that those small conversations, the small talk, can indeed save lives. So this conversation is about what might that sound like, and it can be as simple as, what about this weather today then? Or, do you know where I can grab a coffee? Normal, I'm going to use the phrase, mundane things that we would talk about in everyday conversation. The kind of stuff that we can all do in the office on a Monday morning when you're with a bloke from sales you don't really know very well, so you just have to say something. We've all got the ability to cope in those situations. If the stakes are higher, and this is somebody, no offence to the bloke in sales, by the way, and there is something going on that somebody needs some help and support with, those small conversations can actually shift somebody away from that moment of crisis. And then hopefully that much wider network of support can come around that individual. But you having that conversation can really make a difference. Now, of those who said they wouldn't feel confident approaching someone they don't know, the top reasons for them holding back was worrying the person wouldn't welcome their approach, fretting they'd make the situation worse, while a quarter are apprehensive about not knowing what to say. This conversation with Dr. Lisa is about telling you what you can say. So let's crack on with that conversation and get you that information. Simple as that, really. There's a video that comes with this, which I'll put a link to in the podcast notes. And I'll also put a link to Dr. Lisa in the social media for this as well. You can check us out at Mr. Mick Coyle. That's me on Twitter. And I'm on Instagram as well. And you can join the Facebook group for Mental Health Monday. If you're on any of those, you'll also get little video previews of each of our weekly guests. I put that up just after 8 o'clock. On a Monday morning. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday this week. We started by talking with Dr. Lisa about the fact that these conversations, this small talk that can save lives, is a conversation we can all have.
Yes, and I think that's the, I mean, obviously it's a difficult situation that people encounter, and you know, they might be worried about somebody who's in distress. And the good news is that actually we don't need special skills or training or any script as such to make that sort of initial first step to help somebody. It could be something very simple. It could just be a bit of small talk. It could be, you know, a comment about the weather. It could be asking, you know, where can I get a coffee? It could be a simple smile. It could be even not saying anything. Sometimes we've done a lot of research looking at how people intervene in these situations, and actually also looking at the experiences of people at the other end of these interventions. And sometimes it's the simple presence of somebody there. Sometimes people might position themselves in a particular way and just, you know, remind the person that they're there. It could be a smile, and it could be calling for help if they don't feel that they can intervene, if they don't have the confidence that it's not safe to do so. But really the message is that, you know, it can just be a bit of small talk, and we all know how to do that.
One of the things that as Brits we're pretty bad at, although we can happily talk about the weather all day, that opening up of a conversation, even in any kind of circumstances, sometimes feels a little bit difficult or a little bit awkward. We need to get through that a little bit, don't we? Because the power of small talk in this circumstance literally does save lives.
Yeah, I guess we can practice it. I mean, and it could be something like, do you know what the time is? And as I said, it could also be just a smile or a gesture or being physically present or calling for somebody else. But yeah, we could get better at that. I think from the research we've done, and I know Samaritans have done some work on this recently, I think the stumbling block is more that people worry about making things worse. People worry about, you know, saying the wrong things, or that maybe they might have misjudged the situation. So really, this is a reminder that actually there's no evidence that you can make things worse by just making some small talk. We know, as I said, we've talked to people with sort of lived experience of an intervention in these sorts of situation, that actually a bit of small talk, but when people talk to them, you know, calmly, warmly, there is no evidence that you can make things worse. So be reassured if you, you know, see that something's not quite right, trust your instinct and take that step that, you know, could help save somebody's life.
I wanted to ask you about, obviously, from the research you've done, people who've had that experience of going to a moment where they're in a crisis. What have they said to you subsequently about the things that metaphorically pulled them back from the brink, if you like? What were those things that they were looking for or that were provided to them that made them turn away from that crisis, or just shifted the game away, if you like, from that moment?
Yeah, well, we know that suicidal thoughts are often temporary. So sometimes it could just be a distraction. It's a moment. It could be seeing, we've had people say they just suddenly heard a sound. They heard the sound of children, and they thought they didn't want to upset any children. Sometimes it was a dog barking in the distance. Sometimes it was just somebody smiling at them and reminding them of a sort of human connection and that somebody cared. As I said, it could just be a distraction, and the suicidal thoughts, as I said, fortunately, are often momentary. So that crisis then passes, and then there's an opportunity to seek help, and whatever form that help might need to take.
Yeah, and I wonder whether or not sometimes people think, because suicide is this taboo subject, and it's like this, you know, capital S suicide, and it sort of lives in this dark world that we don't really want to talk about, and then when it does happen, we try and hide it away and put it in a cupboard so that nobody sees it or mentions it ever again. But there's a mundanity to it as well, isn't there, around the fact that just a conversation about a cup of coffee, where can I go and buy this, or where, you know, what do you reckon this weather today, there's a mundanity to that conversation which actually cuts through all that nonsense, taboo, stigma, that just goes to show that actually we can all play a part in this. That there's this idea that suicides are inevitable and there'll always be people who will consider taking their own life. But actually, surveys like this, they just go to show, and the experiences of those people also go to show, there is a mundanity, which is that if you connect with people and you show a human side to them and engage with them, they are much less likely to then go and take that next step, because they feel like they're suddenly connected with things again in a way that maybe they've felt disconnected up to that point.
Yeah, and I think it's really important what you said, in the sense, if there's one thing that people take away from this, is I hope a reminder that suicide is preventable. There is nothing inevitable about it. And actually, compared to many other deaths, it's a death that can be prevented right until the very, very last minute. And we can all play a part in that. So I hope people feel encouraged, and I don't want to say excited to take part. That's probably the wrong word for something like this, but I think it's quite encouraging, and it's really important point for us to all hold on to.
Of course, we're not psychologists and we're not counsellors. So actually, it's important to make the point as well around once that, let's call it an intervention, once that conversation takes place, we're not then expecting people to then, you know, guide someone through the next stages of their mental health journey. What is that signposting about them? What Network Rail, for instance, are involved in this campaign. What are those places that you can go to, or that Network Rail will lend put people on a pathway to, that means that that journey, you know, goes off in a different direction and doesn't just return to the same place the following day.
Yeah, and it's important to say that, because actually when we've talked to people who've made interventions, and often actually they emphasise the importance of teamwork. You know, it was rarely one single person who made an intervention and that was it. Others got involved, and often, as you said, it'd be professionals at a rail station. Of course, they're not the only places where there are these sorts of interventions. But at rail stations, there are over 27,000, I believe, rail employees who are trained by Samaritans to manage those sort of initial conversations and those difficult conversations and think about what help might be needed afterwards. And it really depends on the situation. Sometimes, emergency services might be involved, or the police or others, or sometimes they might be put in touch with the person's GP or Samaritans or family members. It really depends on that situation. But the point, I guess, for somebody who is the first person to make that intervention is to remember that quite often others will help. There'll be some teamwork. There'll be other. It doesn't then rest all on them. And we're not expecting people to take that role.
Absolutely. There's more information online. Small Talk Save Lives and Saves Lives. You can also go to the Samaritans website as well. Samaritans number, as ever, 116123. Dr. Lisa, while I've got you, I just wanted to ask you, in terms of where we're at in terms of the suicide conversation, I've been in the Mental Health Monday podcast for the last sort of 5-6 years now, and I know that the conversation has moved on significantly. The people who kind of know about how the conversation has moved on. Yet every year I will look at suicide figures, and they remain frustratingly, stubbornly, depressingly high. So although the conversation is changing, and I think that's for the better, still people are taking their own lives in numbers which is incredibly sad, but also, as we've talked about, preventable as well. Can I ask you, from your own research, what are those next stages? What are those next steps or understandings that we have around suicide that we can take action on in the next sort of 5 to 10 years to start to see that maybe extra knowledge about mental health and understanding about mental health result in fewer people dying by suicide?
Yeah, well, we have a new strategy actually that's being developed now for the next 10 years, very much to think about what the next steps are that we can take now. And within that, there's a focus on specific groups and specific sort of risk factors that we know are important to tackle. I think, the main thing, and this is certainly not something new, is how important it is that we work that in a sort of multi-agency way, that there's, suicide is complex, and there's, there can't be a simple solution, and it can't be the responsibility of a single, whether it's medical doctors or Samaritans or whatever else. We really all need to sort of work together on this and identify risks, and ideally as early as possible. I mean, prevention is so important. I think we are making headways, but you're right. I mean, it'd be nice to see the numbers decreasing further. But there's lots of effort, and as you said, I think people are talking much more about suicide than we were. I think we're talking about mental health generally more than we were. I think the pandemic, with all the negatives that it brought to us, actually made people much more open about talking about how they were feeling and so on. And I think that is a positive step. And I think within that, it's also remembering that, I see lots of campaigns and lots of initiative and lots of focus on saying, seek help when you're struggling. I think it's also remembering to help others if you're worried that they're struggling.
One of the things that I've really noticed is a change in the way that people have talked about that, this idea of, reach out for help, instead to flip it around and to say, reach in for help. Reach in, like if you see someone struggling, that's the time to go in. And the change in the conversation around asking someone about their suicidal thoughts, are you feeling suicidal, which is a question 15 or 20 years ago, that nobody would have ever dared utter. And yet now I hear many, many people saying that is a question which does not do any damage at all. If anything, it gives a key, it gives a gateway to a conversation which might reveal someone's, you know, troubles, difficulties, create that moment. And I wonder whether or not actually that are you feeling suicidal? The normalization of that question within society would be a really great step forward to this wider conversation.
I mean, there's no evidence that, as you said, there's no evidence that that makes things worse at all. And if anything, it allows people, you know, people who I've mentioned before, but, you know, suicidal thoughts are often temporary and people can have experienced a lot of ambivalence about it, and giving them an opportunity to talk about how they're feeling. I think it's incredibly positive, and I hope, like you, it sounds like we are moving in that direction and that we are being more open about it. I mean, having said that, I think we need to be careful about, you know, how we talk about suicides in particular contexts, and we may, you know, that it's not sort of romanticized or portrayed in particular ways, or that we, you know, I've been doing some work on, you know, how, for example, the media talks about suicide, and there are risks in, you know, in this story about, you know, suicides are going to increase when actually there's no evidence that they are, etc. So I think we still need to talk about it responsibly. But as long as we do it responsibly, I think we should, and I think we are.
I mean, I guess when people say to you, what do you do for a living? And you talk about the research that you do, people must react in certain way and go, oh, is that sounds a bit depressing, or that sounds a bit, or like, do people yes. know what to
but
say?
But it has changed. It has changed over the years. I've been working in suicide prevention for almost 20 something years. And yes, I mean, at the beginning, the reaction was very different to the one I get now. Maybe something's changed in how I talk about my work and my own confidence, etc. But actually, quite often people use that as an opportunity to ask me questions about what they can do if they're worried about somebody or if they've got particular experiences. So, yes, I think it's changing a bit. But yeah, sometimes with some reactions and some which are perhaps understandable.
Superheroes in the movies sort of wear capes and they have their underpants on the outside of the clothes, and that's not how you're dressed, just for the people who are listening to this conversation. But the work that you've done, the research that you've done, you must have had feedback from people who say that we've implemented X, Y, or Z and we've used your research, and as a result people have come to them and said that they've changed their attitude around the way that they think about life and suicide. Have you, in that way, have you saved lives, and how do people communicate that with you?
Oh gosh, not directly, I guess. I mean, not. I don't know that I've. I mean, I've been involved in campaigns like this one. I'm glad that on radio you can't see blushing. I have won a National Lifesaver Award at some point. I mean, it's difficult to quantify these things. I mean, we do the research, you know, and actually it's not just me. There's a whole team of us working together. We're very passionate about this. And really hoping to make a difference with it. I mean, there'd be no point otherwise. Sometimes, yes, we've had good feedback about the research that we've done. Sometimes, you know, really heartwarming comments about we've done, you know, research involving, you know, sort of one-to-one, really in-depth, rich interviews, but also surveys that were deliberately anonymous, open to the public, so people could speak very freely about their experiences. And sometimes, you know, some lovely comments about the importance of asking these questions and of then sort of following up that and making sure that they're translated into something that can help people. So very proud to have been, you know, working with Samaritans. I've been involved with this campaign with Small Talk Saves Lives, first launched in 2017. So I've been involved with that from the outset, and with other work, thinking particularly about suicide prevention in public places. But also other contexts. I've worked in prisons and all sorts of other places, hoping to, you know, trying to make a difference where possible. I think even if we can see, you know, every suicide is a tragedy. So even, you know, playing a part in preventing just one is worth the work.
That was a very humble answer, Dr. Lisa, for what sounds like someone who's done some incredible work. I think the Lifesaver Award itself probably speaks for itself. But no, absolutely. I wanted to ask you that. And thank you for that work and the ongoing work. Because, like, again, this is a conversation which will absolutely, you know, move on. But it's the work that's happening now and the trailblazers like yourself over the last years that are really framing how we understand suicide and obviously hopefully can bring it to an end. Thank you for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
We wish you all the best for this campaign and more. Dr. Lisa Malzano, Small Talk, Safe Lives. You can find out more information on the Samaritans website. Quick Google of that phrase as well brings it all up on your homepages.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.